I've got nothing but one big love for my next special guest. She is a celebrated author, political strategist, producer, entrepreneur, lawyer, and voting rights advocate. She's written 17 books in almost every sort of genre you can imagine: romance, thrillers, nonfiction, and children's books. And her latest novel, Coded Justice, is the third in a series featuring Avery Keene, a former Supreme Court clerk turned corporate investigator. And in this latest book, Avery takes a deep dive into the ethical and justice implications of AI in veteran healthcare. And it's a story that begins with promise, but raises really, I think, poignant and timely questions about justice and ethics and artificial intelligence and technology more broadly. And aside from her writing, Leader Abrams has served for over a decade in the Georgia House of Representatives, including as minority leader. And she made history in that role as the first woman and first Black American to lead either party in the Georgia General Assembly. She also ran twice as a Democratic candidate for governor in Georgia in 2018 and again in 2022, making history in that first run as the first Black woman to be a major party's gubernatorial nominee. While she nearly lost both of those races, her campaigns drew national attention to voter suppression issues. And in response, she founded Fair Fight Action, an organization credited with increasing voter turnout in Georgia and contributing to those key Democratic victories in 2020 in the state of Georgia for Joe Biden and the Senate elections, bringing us Senator Raphael Warnock and beyond. She also made history in February 19, 2019, when she became the first African-American woman to deliver the response to then first-term President Donald Trump's State of the Union address. I watched that. You were amazing. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Madam Stacey Abrams, for joining us here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Let's just jump right in because there is so much going on. First of all, you're in Madison, Wisconsin. You were born in Madison, so welcome back home to our great state. I spent a good amount of time in my first hour talking with a former U.S. attorney about the Supreme Court's shadow docket decision yesterday that basically said racial profiling, just fine with us. Apparently no Fourth Amendment problems there in what I can only call a really shocking and depressing decision. Trump has now claims to have launched Operation Midway Blitz in Chicago. I have to say, this feels like what was happening to Jewish folks and others in the 1930s. It feels like the Korematsu decision, where we interned Japanese folks in these United States, also during World War II. It feels like what Viktor Orban has done to Hungary, to strip away what are fundamental pillars of democracy, what many refer to as electoral autocracy. And I know you were on Jimmy Kimmel's show. Your appearance was fabulous. And when you were with Mr. Kimmel, you talked about these 10 steps to autocracy and authoritarianism. And so first, I wanted to get your reaction to yesterday's shadow docket ruling from the Supreme Court, and then talk a little about what these 10 steps are and why every American, no matter what your political preferences are, should be very concerned about what's going on.
Well, first of all, I thank you so much for being so thoughtful about how you're framing it, because our first responsibility when you are facing the rise of authoritarianism, when you're facing the onslaught and onset of autocracy, is that people have to recognize it. And it's not going to announce itself. They're not going to say, this is authoritarianism. What they're going to do is use the power they are seizing to accomplish the ends they desire. And you name-checked some very important moments, but I would add to that Plessy v. Ferguson, yes, and Dred Scott, cases that stripped African-Americans of citizenship and their right to access the Constitution. And what happened yesterday in the shadow docket decision was that the Supreme Court said that it was permissible, legally permissible in the United States of America to use racial profiling, to use accents, and to use race itself as a predicate for denying someone access to due process, which is guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment does not apply based on your citizenship. It applies based on your presence in the United States. And what they have said is very much akin to those decisions, which is that they are suspending the Constitution with respect to certain persons based exclusively and entirely on race and ethnicity and the vague presumption that an accent signals the same.
This bears repeating. They are suspending constitutional rights for persons based on their race and ethnicity. There is no moment in recorded human history where you look at an autocratic regime where that is not an element of that regime. The stripping of rights based on race should be anathema to every American of good faith. And this important point that you made, Leader Abrams, that the Constitution guarantees due process to all persons, does not limit those due process rights to only citizens. And that stripping away of that right based on someone's race should be a call to rise up and protest for all of us. So let's talk a little bit about these other 10 steps to autocracy and authoritarianism. You were describing them in your last response to my question, but let's dig in. What are some of those steps? Because I think when you start to describe them, the fact that they are occurring right now cannot be denied.
So the one we've just described is a combination of step 7, which is the using of marginalization to suspend and to scapegoat communities. They began with DEI. This administration, suborned by Republicans, so this is not just about one man. This is about an entire party apparatus saying that this is permissible behavior. And so step 7 says that you scapegoat vulnerable communities because you need to blame someone for the ills that people are feeling and for the failures of the government that is seizing power. And so you scapegoat immigrants. You go after communities of color. And I want to put a fine point on this because something you said a second ago just triggered for me. I want to remind people that the reason that citizenship is such a critical non-metric in due process, Native Americans did not hold citizenship in the United States until 1921. And so had the 14th Amendment not applied to the presence in the United States, Native Americans would not have been entitled to due process in this country, not after 1865 and 1867, but not until 1921. So it's an incredibly important hallmark for us to hold that citizenship is not the metric. It is your presence in the United States. And that's important because that helps us get to step 9. One of the other metrics of an authoritarian regime that we are seeing play out in this country is that one of the intentions is to privatize violence and militarize law enforcement. Mm. You mentioned the Gestapo. You mentioned what was happening in Germany in the 1930s, what happens in Hungary. What tends to happen is that autocrats will take law enforcement, which is typically domestic protection, and they convert it into military power. And Trump and his colleagues, suborned by governors like the governor of Georgia, the governor of Texas, governors who are sending National Guardsmen into American cities, they are doing so because they are allowing and supporting the militarization of our communities. That's called occupation. And when occupation happens, it rarely recedes. When they occupy a place, the goal is to hold it and then to expand from there. But this all begins with step 2, which is that we see the expansion of executive power. Step 3, we see the weakening of competing powers. And the reason I'm so explicit about calling out all Republicans, because they are the ones who hold power. They hold all 3 branches of government. And those branches are supposed to put a check on step 2. You shouldn't have an executive who can exceed their powers if you have a Congress that actually uses its powers or a court like the Supreme Court that checks and mitigates the use of those powers. But what we're watching in step 3 is that Congress is complicit and the Supreme Court is suborning the seizure of constitutional powers and its warping. Then you go to step four, you break government so it doesn't work for anyone. And again, it's not this big fanfare. It's small things like, oh, I don't know, gutting the Department of Education. We have a guest coming up on our podcast, Assembly Required, where we talk about what happens when kids can't get IEPs, when they can't get individualized education plans. Well, that's going to be incredibly difficult in this country because they've broken the Department of Education, fired half of the staff, and one of the clear and key responsibilities of the Department of Education was to manage the needs of special education students in our country. To go really fast, step five, you install loyalists, and we can go back to that because that's what we're watching happen with the attacks on the Federal Reserve Governor, Lisa Cook, and the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Step six, you gut public information, so you go after the media. Step eight is when you attack everyone who should be protecting civil society. You sue lawyers, you sue law universities, you threaten philanthropies, because all of your work is to get to step 10, making sure that we do not have free and fair elections in this country ever again, so that people are held captive and that they are forced into a behavior that they may revile, but they can't fight against.
Folks, we are talking this afternoon with leader Stacey Abrams. There's so much in here. You're talking about these 10 steps to autocracy and authoritarianism. I just wanted to give the head faint. A lot of this is based on the framework discussed in the work by Professor Kim Lane Sheppel of Princeton University. I always want to drop that citation. You're a lawyer as well. Want to give that credit?
I always give her credit. I say that I use her framework. She allowed me to editorialize it and remix it a bit. Because
yes.
There are some frames that I've added in there that she's been incredibly supportive and has worked with me on this, but I want to make sure that people don't hold her accountable for some of the things I say.
Yes, your renewed or reinvigorated a lens that you bring to the table based on your lived experience, especially in the voting rights category. When you look at, again, step three, the weakening of competing powers, and we look at the attacks from Republicans over decades, this is nothing new, right? The erosion of the Voting Rights Act, the direct attacks on the Voting Rights Act, now the complicit Supreme Court, and the weakening of the powers of the Voting Rights Act, frankly, gutting it in many ways. And all of these false strawmen, these red herrings about voter fraud. The fraud is the thing that's happening out loud and at scale. The efforts to disenfranchise duly qualified citizen electors, the fake slates of electors here in the state of Wisconsin and elsewhere. I wonder, given your advocacy for voting rights, if you can speak to the folks listening a bit. I view that as a bulwark. And so we're gonna ask Leader Abrams, just very briefly, what should folks be working on when it comes to voting rights? When we come back on the other side, we may even talk a little fun stuff about her latest novel. All of that and so much more coming up next. Do not go anywhere. This incredibly important discussion continues. Why every Wisconsinite and every American should be paying attention to the autocracy happening today in our streets, in our schools, and in our voting booths. Our conversation continues. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.